Hello and welcome to another edition of the Treaty City Sports Podcast. I am your host, as usual, Andrew Baker, here with, you guessed it, my co-host, the host of the other host of the Red and Blue Podcast. It's Graham Moen.
Wow, that's a big introduction. What's going on, everybody?
Yeah,
glad to see everyone tuning in. We appreciate the listens. Thank you so much.
I felt like caring about your introduction for the first time ever. How's it feel?
It warms my heart.
Yeah. I bet. You know what else warms my heart?
Yeah.
The fact that the Knicks didn't win the lottery.
I know. So me and Olam, the other host of the Tree City of the Red and Blue Podcast, I was over there hanging out with a couple of them as the lottery was happening, and we literally high-fived when it happened just because we're like, screw the Knicks.
And honestly, at this point, I feel bad for Knicks fans just because they've been so dedicated for so long and they just suck so tragically.
I think my line of thinking is, as a Cleveland fan, I don't really feel bad for other teams, because other cities, because most of them have had other teams that have had success, whereas until 2016, Cleveland really never had success in anything. So I just kind of take it. I just kind of like, it's not really that bad. Like, they still have the Yankees. They still have the Rangers. They still have all these good teams.
Unless they're Mets fans.
I mean, the Mets made the World Series a couple years ago.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyways,
but yeah.
You know who else did not win the lottery? The Cavs.
Yeah.
The Cavs have the fifth pick, which we will discuss.
Which is the second worst pick they could have gotten. Because they could have, the worst pick they could have gotten, yeah, is sixth.
So. We can discuss the Cavs shortly here, but I think first of all, we should start with the overall impact of the lottery. So the Pelicans won the lottery, which is kind of wild because it's kind of been assumed that if the Knicks or Lakers or perhaps a couple other teams had won the lottery, that pick would have been traded for Anthony Davis. Instead, the Pelicans get the pick, which is going to be Zion Williamson, and they still have Anthony Davis.
Yeah, and David Griffin is kicking his heels.
You know what? Salute to David Griffin, because he's won the lottery like four times or something insane.
So it must not be
David Griffin is a great person and a great basketball mind, and I wish he was running the Cavs, which we discussed again. Screw Dan Gilbert. Anyways.
I was happy to see that, because, and it's also good for Pelicans fans, because they're most likely, even with this, going to probably still lose Anthony Davis, and we're going to get to that in a second, but it's good for them to know that they're not going to just completely bottom out and be a terrible team for a long period of time, or at least they won't be boring. They'll have excitement, because unless for some reason they trade the pick, which for a team like the Pelicans would make no sense, Zion Williamson's going to go to the Pelicans, and they're going to have a guy with potential superstar talent on their team for at least the next 7 years.
You know, the thing is, Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, and Zion Williamson is a big three.
I think
Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, you can legitimately argue that team has a chance at the finals with a couple good role players.
Yeah, it sucks that they traded away some of the role players that would have helped, like Nikola Mirotic and a couple other guys on the team that just haven't performed, whether it was I'm trying to think. They have a lot of wing guys that they've never really been able to a lot of wings that never really
– they have a real motley crew.
Yeah, that's been their biggest issue. Is that
Solomon Hill's $44
million contract. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, Solomon Hill. Like, they've never had good wing play, and having Zion Williamson would be great for that, because he could help bring that different aspect. But it could also help just because it would give another playmaker on that team, and would really make it interesting to see how that offense would run if Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday didn't constantly have to have the ball in their hands, because both of those guys are able to be successful without the ball in their hands because they've played off each other for so long. So adding another guy with that type of ability, with kind of like a Draymond-esque type of passing skill set, where he's able to just get down the hill and be able to see those passes. He's not quite on Draymond's level in terms of a passer, because Draymond's one of the best passing guys in the league right now. But he has that ability, and that could really help the Pelicans, and that could really set up for a good foundation, a team that maybe Anthony Davis would want to stay.
Yeah, and I think Anthony Davis wants to move on just because he wants to be in a big market and play with our stars and stuff. And I get it, but I also think that it's important to remember that, you know, if you're in the playoffs and you're winning rounds and you're getting deep in the playoffs, you're going to be on TV constantly. And plus, Zion Williamson is one of the biggest draws in the NBA in terms of – I mean, the Pelicans are going to have a lot of national TV games just because of him.
Yeah.
No one cares about the Pelicans.
Whether Anthony Davis is there or not.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is, I think Davis does have to sit down and consider, all right, look, we still got Drew Holiday. We're having a generational talent like myself. We're going to have – David Griffin, who's running the front office, who is, you know, David Griffin's a really, really good front office guy. He's shown that he can build an organizational culture top down. He's shown that he can rebuild. He's shown that he can build a contender on the fly. He's shown all those abilities. And I think, you know, there's a chance that David Griffin can consider, can convince Anthony Davis to at least give him like another half a year or something. Yeah. I think most likely the trade will happen. And if the trade does happen going forward, I think they should probably trade Jrue Holiday too.
Yeah.
And I think that they have the potential to have, you know, to go from the situation where it's like, oh man, what are we going to have to do for Anthony Davis? To all of a sudden you're getting the assets for Anthony Davis.
Right.
You're getting potentially the assets for Jrue Holiday and you're having Zion Williamson. That rebuild could get started real fast. And let's start with that. I mean, look, the Knicks have the third pick and the Lakers have the fourth pick.
Yeah.
And those are the two teams that the majority of people think will be perhaps the biggest contenders in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes, alongside mm-hmm. teams like maybe Boston or whoever else you want to mention.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say –
maybe the Clippers.
Let's say you trade them to the Knicks and you can get RJ Barrett, and RJ and Zion can play together at the next level. I mean – good for the Pelicans, because this last 6 months has been pretty ugly and the reward has been massive for them.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a lot of irony in the fact that the NBA refused to let them sit Anthony Davis out and they only played him a few minutes a game and tanked and got the number one pick.
It's kind of poetic justice in a way. It's like you have to play him so that way you're not tanking. We didn't tank, so we still got the number one pick.
I think once a player requests to trade publicly, then you shouldn't have to play him.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, because that's like, what do you really want?
Also, you're risking a potential asset. So it's
that's
like,
what I'm saying. Yeah,
it's like, why play a guy that with all world talent?
If you know he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see for the Knicks and the Lakers, because the Knicks really don't have the assets to swing the Pelicans to make a deal. And with the Pelicans winning the lottery, they have all the leverage. Because before, if it was, okay, we'll give you the number one pick for Anthony Davis, then they could have gotten Zion Williamson. Now they could get Zion Williamson and potentially keep Anthony Davis. Or like you said, they can make a big trade and get a lot of young pieces, but the Knicks don't have anything like that. Their best young piece is Kevin Knox, and he wasn't good last year. Frank Nicolatina has been a complete disappointment. They don't have anybody.
Mitchell Robinson, who's fun, but he's probably a bench piece.
Yeah, so it's like they don't have anybody that the Pelicans are going to look at and be like,
well, what if they have Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant and someone else, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving.
But I'm saying,
I think the number three pick might be the best headliner they're going to find in a deal. That's what I'm saying.
Or if they want to go back to the Lakers, which
I agree.
I
agree with what you're saying. The peripheral pieces might not be there for the Knicks, and that's the thing. But I think if the Pelicans love RJ Barrett, I think three is the best thing they're going to get offered.
Yeah, unless the Lakers. Yeah, I mean the Lakers could offer them four, but I mean at this point they could have offered them the first round pick. And all those young pieces, whether it was Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball or Josh Hart or Kyle Kuzma, like they could have offered a lot of that stuff in a deal at the deadline and chose not to and chose to let it go into the offseason. And now they know they're picking fourth. How valuable is that? And when they really were going to pick 11th, so really they should consider themselves lucky.
Well, I think the Lakers offered all that stuff and the Pelicans didn't want it.
And I think part of it, because there's reports that are saying they just don't want to deal into the Lakers.
Which, I get it, but at a certain point,
if they give you the best package, you got to take it.
Yeah. And I think that if you look at the young talent the Lakers have, be it Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, Hart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think at a certain point, the fourth pick and one or two of those guys is better than three and whatever the Knicks can offer.
Yeah.
But that just depends on how great, again, if they think RJ Barrett's a future superstar, then, and they don't love the Lakers guys, then it looks different.
Yeah.
But
or if they think the Lakers
the point
are
is,
be good.
The point is, the Pelicans are in the driver's seat now, and they weren't before the lottery.
Yeah. Like, had they not won the lottery, they would have been like, they still could have had a chance at Zion Williamson, but it would have required trading Anthony Davis. Now they can kind of just sit back and David Griffin can just be like, bring me your best offers. If not, I'll keep him until the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I'll play chicken with you because eventually he's going to either decide that he wants to be traded and they'll do that and it might be for less than what they want. That's the risk. But the other problem, but then you'll have a more clear idea of which teams he'll sign with.
Hey, and look, David Griffin's a persuasive guy. I mean, as soon as he left, the Cavs completely fell apart.
As soon as he left, Kyrie wanted to leave.
Yeah, and I think that David Griffin was a lot of what was holding the Cavs together with Dan Gilbert's nonsense and LeBron's power and Kyrie's complaining and Kevin Love just doing his job and shutting up unlike everybody else. But
love you, Kevin.
You know, yeah, I love you, Kevin Love, even though you're not a very good contract now, but that's okay. You're a Cav for life, just like Channing Frye. Congrats on the retirement. You know, I have a beer, Sibling Brewery. Up in Cleveland has a mm-hmm. Channing Frye PA. I have to get one. So I think one of the – by the way, Vegas odds put the Knicks' chance of winning the lottery at like 20%.
Yeah, they thought it was rigged.
And people were still betting on that even though they had a 14% chance. And Vegas is just like, sure, we'll take your money, you idiots.
Yeah, I mean, that's – I think
Knicks fans were always like, this is the year. It's going to happen. So you have a 14% chance.
If anything
– you should not expect to ever win the lottery.
With the new lottery changes, it made it really difficult. And if the changes made – the changes worked in terms of the fact that there was a lot of drama in this year's lottery. Three of the four teams that picked top four were not in the top four odds.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers jumped from 11 to 4, which is obnoxious.
I think the Knicks were the only team in the top four.
They were.
That had a top four chance.
Because the Grizzlies were like 8th, I think, and they finished 2nd.
The Pelicans were at like 7th or 6th.
Yeah, 7th, 9th, something like that, yeah.
And they moved up. The Lakers moved up from 11. The Knicks had a good chance. They had as just good of a chance as the Cavs and the Grizzlies. And
the Cavs, who had the second best odds, finished 5th.
Yeah.
So that kind of sucks. But look,
the lottery worked in terms of drama, in terms of just storylines. Like,
will it stop tanking?
I don't think so, but I think it definitely makes people is going to make front office people think now, because it used to be you had a 25% chance. Like when the Cavs tanked for LeBron all those years ago, they knew that they had a really good opportunity, that if they tanked, they were going to get LeBron James.
Yeah.
Now, if you do that, that's 11% that you're losing. That's a big percentage when it comes to those ping pong balls. It gives a very flat, even chance for a team like the Pelicans that went from going 8th to being the number one pick.
Yeah.
And like how we saw – because it used to take miracle efforts like the Cavs when they won the lottery to get Kyrie Irving. That was like a 2% chance.
Yeah, the Cavs were like 9th, I think.
Yeah. So 9th back then was like a 2.5%, 3% chance, whereas now it's like 7%, 8%. That matters. So it creates a lot of drama, and now it gets to the point now where it gave a small market team – all the leverage, which is something you very rarely see in the NBA nowadays, where it's usually big markets with stars wanting to pair together, with the exception of a few places like Milwaukee, but that's homegrown talent.
And we'll see how long Milwaukee's run lasts. I mean, if they can't find more high-end talent to get to the finals with Giannis, then Giannis could be out
even for
years,
a team like Toronto. Toronto might be in a one-year window where Kawhi leaves and they might just have to reset.
Yep.
And those are the type of things that, as a small market team, you cannot control as much as a big market team, because while it has become easier than ever to be noticed in the NBA because of TV contracts and when people play, it's still much more preferential to play in a big market, because it not only helps the player, maybe the player just likes that area, but it also helps their brand, and it also gives them more marketing and business opportunities, which is a lot of the reason LeBron went to LA. He can't do the same things in Cleveland that he can in LA. And that's going to continue to happen. And the lottery changes are not going to change that at all.
LeBron did not go to LA for basketball reasons. I know that.
Yeah, he's in just as bad of a situation.
If you're the Cavs at 5, I think there's 4 options for your pick. 4 realistic options, I should say. There's Darius Garland, who's kind of a scoring combo guard, if that sounds familiar. There's DeAndre Hunter, who's more experienced, great defender, solid athlete, decent shooter type. There's Jarrett.
Shoot 48% from threes this year.
Yeah. There's Jarrett Culver, who's kind of an all-around type of player, jack of all trades.
Yeah.
He's a guard. And there's Cam Reddish, who has immense athletic upside and struggled at Duke, but also a lot of people still think could be a high-end player.
Yeah, some people feel like he was marginalized because of R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson commanding so much of the ball when they were at Duke.
I think mostly R.J. Barrett, and I think some people think that Barrett was kind of a ball hog. But that said,
well, Zion was out for a decent period, so he had to be.
Well, and that said, Reddish was supposed to be a knockdown shooter. He didn't shoot well at all.
No, he shot like 32%.
He wasn't supposed to be a creator.
Yeah.
So if you're the Cavs, Graham, who is your 1A and 1B out of these 4 players right now, and why?
Well, I definitely think you need to add some versatility and some length to this team, because if you look at the Cavs roster right now, there's really not that much length on the team at all. I mean, the biggest guy you have on the team is Tristan Thompson. And then after that, it's like Larry Nance, who stands at like 6'9".
Well, let's break it down like this real quick. What are the Cavs' long-term pieces right now?
Colin Sexton and maybe Larry Nance.
And Jetty Osman.
And maybe Jetty. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Because Tristan will be gone after this year, or even this year with an expiring. And then all those other guys that are coming up will eventually be gone. So the Cavs have to decide what is going to fit with them. And also they need to really have a discussion with each other and be like, what do we feel like is the true ceiling for Colin Sexton? because Colin Sexton did improve at the end of this past year. He improved as a scorer, specifically as a three-point shooter. He was doing so much better shooting threes, whereas at the beginning of the year, he was more of a mid-range guy. He was a lot more comfortable. He was taking more threes as the year went on. But Andrew said this to me plenty of times, and it's just facts. He's a horrible passer. He is not a playmaker whatsoever for other people, as he's able to create his own shot, but not really as well for others. He's not really much of a rebounder. He's not an amazing defender. He could probably be an average to above average defender. So if you look at that player, that's not a player you're going to build an entire team around. So you need a player that, but at the same time, you need a player that's going to initiate offense. If I'm the Cavs, you need someone that's a little bit bigger, can initiate offense, and is willing to play defense.
I think the Cavs take the best player available.
Yes.
And I'll tell you
for
two reasons. Number one, we just mentioned Sexton, Jetty Osman, and Larry Nance Jr. as the Cavs' long-term pieces right now. And quite frankly, I don't know that any of those three guys is guaranteed to be a starting caliber piece moving forward.
Yeah. Like,
I think the Cavs are so dramatically far away from contending that you don't worry about how a draft pick fits in with Sexton or any of those guys on the roster right now, because quite frankly, I think that you need so much high-end talent to even think about a playoff contending team, much less anything beyond that. But I think you go with the best guy available. That said, you know, like I said, who's your 1A right now? And this can change, obviously, and neither of us is professional scouts, but if you had to pick one, who would it be? And if you had a backup plan, who would it be?
I would probably take Hunter as my 1A and then Culver as my 1B, just because they both are able to create, but they also are bigger guys, and they also have the ability to play defense, and they're a little more versatile in how they play defense. So to Andrew's point, he's right that you can't build a team based on the specific players, but you can look for specific skill sets, I think, that you're looking for. And I think in the NBA nowadays, if you can't hit three-pointers, play if you can't do some of these things, hit three-pointers, play defense, be able to switch and be versatile, and have a somewhat reliable handle, you're not going to be a very successful player, or a player that's going to be someone that you could build a team around. And to be honest, a lot of these guys we're considering probably aren't going to be foundational, like top three players on a team. They're probably going to be supporting cast members. But it's still important that you get guys that are going to buy into playing physical on defense, that are able to bring the ball up the floor and initiate offense, and are also able to be somewhat reliable as a shooter.
So
I would put Hunter as my 1A and then Culver as my 1B. The person I like the least is Reddish, just because he's shown me the least amount. He doesn't have a good shot. He's not a very good defender. He's very thin, so he's going to get abused on a lot of stuff as he grows into his NBA body. So he's not the type of player I would want right long term. He has probably the most potential out of all these guys, but I think he also has the lowest floor.
So I think my philosophy is a little bit different for if I was the Cavs drafting right now. And it's mostly because of that, you know, complete lack of being anywhere near contending right now. I think the Cavs are in a situation where they have to look at this rebuild in extreme long
like 5
view.
Years.
Yeah, because look, Kevin Love's contract is going to be hard to trade. And even if you can move it, you're not getting much in terms of assets for it. You're probably going to have to just play out the string with Kevin Love, more likely than not.
Or if you get an asset, you're going to be taking on other long-term
money. And you're not going to get a huge asset in return either way.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Sexton, I think the Cavs' number one need long-term is a 1A option that can handle the ball and run the offense.
Yeah.
Okay, and, you know, the thing is, there's none of those that's going to be available to the Cavs at 5.
No, once we fill out of the top three, where John Morant and RJ Barrett would be, because both of them are great creators and especially John Morant, he's able to create for himself and has a good shot. Once you get to 5, you're not going to get those high end options.
Right, and this is my point: is I think the Cavs' goal should be to develop some talent and be really bad again next year.
Oh yeah,
because the Cavs pretty much have to stay bad until they finally get a top 2 to 3 pick and a chance at a guy who can become a 1A. Because Sexton had some development his rookie year, yes. I don't think there's any world in which he's a 1A.
No.
There's certainly no world in which Jetty Osman is either.
No.
And obviously Larry Nance is kind of a bench guy.
Yeah.
And those are some decent pieces to start with, okay? And I like those guys to a certain degree. But I think if you're the Cavs, you have to take the extreme long view and you have to accept that you can't pick a guy based off fit right now. So I think that my 1A, I think Hunter would probably be the bottom of my list. I actually like Hunter a lot as a player. He can shoot. He's a tenacious defender. He's got NBA physicality. So
you know, if they come from Virginia, they're going to be tough, physical guys, especially on the defense side, because Tony Bennett preaches that.
If I was a different team, I would certainly consider him over all these guys. I really like him, but his upside is not that of a great player. And I think that where the Cavs are at, I think they should kind of view things in the scope of mostly drafting for upside right now, because the Cavs are not finishing off a rebuild. They're at the beginning of one.
Yeah.
And I think if you get DeAndre Hunter and he's a solid player and he helps you win a few games, but he's not an impact player, that's fine. But I think that's more the type of guy that you want to draft near the end of a rebuild, not the beginning. I think I'd go for upside above all else. I think Darius Garland for me is kind of – he's kind of the wild card. I mean, he only played 5 games in college. I'm not a professional enough, you know, NBA scout to have seen his high school tape or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think that he would be a poor fit next to Colin Sexton. And I don't really consider that a whole lot, but I do prefer Culver because of the versatility that you mentioned. And I think Culver also has upside to be kind of a secondary ball handler on a team.
Yeah.
And I think that if Sexton is going to be a bench scorer or, you know, a short shooting guard, you know, like I said, I'm not taking too much into consideration Colin Sexton's fit next to these guys because
He was the 8th pick. It's not like he was like a top 3 pick.
I don't think he's good enough to worry about that necessarily. But I like Culver because I think Culver does have upside to develop into a really solid, like, number 2, number 3 option on a good team. So I think he'd be my 1A. I think Reddish would be my 1B, and I'll tell you why. I don't really like Cam Reddish a whole lot. You know, he didn't shoot well. He didn't really play with passion. But I'll tell you this, he's got massive upside, and I think that's why I'd take him. And it's not because I think he has the best chance to be a good NBA player, because I think he is the most high-risk, high-reward of these guys.
Right.
I think there's a good chance he's a bust. But the upside for him is a knockdown three-point shooter, kind of a versatile scorer, and a really, really good tall wing defender.
I mean, his upside is Paul George.
This is the thing. If you're the Cavs and you draft Cam Reddish and he's a bust, you're not really that much further behind in your development as a team because it just means you're going to stay in the top 3.
No, but it's one less asset that you have.
But if you draft him, sure. But if the Cavs are going to be bad for the next 5 years, they're going to keep getting top 5 picks. And I think that
– Maybe not the lottery.
Well, I know what you're saying. But if you hang around the top 5, you're eventually going to hit on one. You know what I'm saying? Is my point. And I'm not saying you just burn the asset and take a bad player. My point is, I do think there is massive upside with Reddish. And I think that if you get him and he reaches his upside, you actually have one of those upper echelon type players. And if he doesn't, then he's a bust and you move on and you've got, you know, still years of being a top 5 draft pick team. So I think that in terms of who I like as a player the best, it might be Hunter. But I think for the Cavs, he doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, he's a good three-point shooter. He can handle the
ball. No, he's a really good player. I'm just saying the upside isn't huge with him. And so at a certain point, if the Cavs aren't drafting for upside right now, this early in the rebuild, what are we really doing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, if I'm the Cavs, I want to have as many assets as possible for the maybe eventuality that a star does become
LeBron
available.
Wants to return.
Everyone says LeBron. And
39-year-old LeBron parts the Red Seas and comes back.
Well, A, we would never trade that much for a 39-year-old LeBron.
No, he'd sign as a free agent.
But my point is that
Kevin Love will still be here, the corpse of Kevin Love.
If the Cavs want to have a chance.
Come back, Kyrie.
Because even in a 5-year window, you want to build as many assets that you have that you feel confident in that are going to be good contributors, that whether or not they're part of your team, they're at least good contributors and they are going to be good trade assets. Whereas if you take a guy with amazing upside like Cam Reddish, but he busts, his value is zero. And you end up with a problem like the Phoenix Suns, who took huge risks and they're still very far ahead very far behind in the process when they took Marquise Crist and Dragon Bender. Because they took Devin Booker and they had that one nice guy, and then they took 2 duds, and they've kept taking duds every year. instead of taking a guy that's going to be a good player in the league for a long time.
Well, look, end of the day, the Cavs should take the player that they think is going to be the best NBA player.
Yes, and they shouldn't take a player.
That's the end of the day.
And they shouldn't take a player regardless of position. That is also true. Yes. They need to take the best player that they think is available.
Yes.
Screw positional need and worry about how he is going to fit into the long-term plans of the team. Whether it's if he is going to – and if he – some guys end up doing more than you expect them to. Maybe DeAndre Hunter turns into – a star player. Maybe Cam Reddish does as well, but I would feel more comfortable, me personally, taking the risk on somebody that I know is going to play defense, that I know can play make, that I know has a reliable jumper that I'm not going to have to fix constantly, and someone that has been a leader on a team that has won and had success. That doesn't mean the Cavs are going to win many more games, but it's going to help create a culture and create an attitude, which you need.
I really don't like Cam Reddish. I don't know why. I just tried to talk myself into him. But end of the day, look, you take the best player. You take the player you think is going to be the best NBA player, regardless of position, regardless of fit, regardless of, you know, age, whatever. Take the guy you think is going to be the best pro. And the problem is, I don't trust the Cavs to do that. I think Kobe Altman's done a pretty solid job as a general manager. But I think that Dan Gilbert continues to have influence over personnel moves and draft picks, which is the worst thing you could ever have as an organization, as an owner that knows nothing about basketball, doing all these influence. And I think that the Cavs are... front office, as currently constructed, is totally unproven in terms of drafting players.
Yeah.
Sexton so far is looking like
a sixth man.
A decent pick where it was, but there was another guard that played the same position who's better than him available right after him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just hope that Dan Gilbert can shut up and, you know, maybe his stroke can keep him in the hospital till after the draft. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. That was too far. All right. We're going to be right back. We are back. I regret to admit that we forgot to include one more long-term piece in the Cavs' plans, and that's Matthew Dellavedova, who should be a Cavalier for life.
I mean, he'll probably be a coach someday.
Cavalier for life! So, the NBA Finals.
Starts tonight, because we're recording on Thursday, May 30th.
It does. Kevin Durant is not playing. DeMarcus Cousins is playing.
That's a twist.
Golden State Warriors versus the Cleveland Cavaliers for the fifth year in a row. No, I forgot. It's the Toronto Raptors, who, now that LeBron's out of the conference, actually have a chance to.
Well, LeBron is the owner of the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah. Well, they have Kawhi Leonard now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big deal.
I mean, the way he's been playing this year, he honestly has been playing better than LeBron this year. And I mean, if you count the playoffs too, then
LeBron isn't in the playoffs.
His team sucked. I don't know what to tell you. But
Kawhi Leonard is doing unbelievable things.
Kawhi played, especially the last part of last series against Milwaukee, he played the last couple games where he had to guard Giannis and still be the primary scorer and did a magnificent job at it.
I think it's going to be a fascinating finals.
It's going to be really interesting to figure out how they're going to stop Golden State when they don't have Kevin Durant, but they still have the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green, and trying to figure out who is going to be the person that you try to cut the head off of. Who's the player that you feel like
it has to be? Steph Curry.
The question is, do you put Kawhi on Steph Curry to try to stop him from scoring and initiating offense, or do you put him on Draymond to maybe stop him from just initiating offense, especially when they get on the fast break? If you have Steven on the fast break, you'd much rather have Kawhi getting in front of Draymond to have those long arms around him to disrupt passing lanes, to then have Danny Green and Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry be able to play, come back, get on those guys, push them off the line, and then make the other people around them beat you. I think you have to make Klay specifically. I think you have to make him beat you out of all the three of those guys, because Draymond is a masterful passer. Curry is a good passer, along with being one of the best shooters of our probably the best shooter of our generation and maybe of all time. So you're going to need to.
I think it's definitely of all time.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much gotten that point. But my point being, are you going to put Kawhi on someone that's going to initiate the offense, or are you going to put him on someone that can pass, but is also the most lethal scorer you have on the team? Like, how, because with Draymond, when Draymond gets going and he gets downhill and he gets people involved, the Warriors become very, very difficult to stop, if not impossible. So I think the biggest question is, with the Raptors personnel, where are you putting all these different guys? Can Kyle Lowry show up like he did at the end of the last series and really put the clamps down on people, whether it was Malcolm Brogdon or Eric Bledsoe or any of these people that were playing for Milwaukee?
Well, that's the thing is, I think there's two more things to consider with where you put Kawhi. Number one, Kyle Lowry can only guard up so far. I mean, yeah. I think Kyle Lowry on Clay doesn't make a lot of sense because you've got Siakam and Danny Green.
And Clay just has the height advantage on him, so he can just take mid-range shots or go off the dribble with him.
And if you don't put Kyle Lowry on Steph Curry, where is he going to go?
You probably hide him on Iguodala, but then you're getting, losing what's part of what makes Lowry a very important player for the Raptors.
That's his defensive ability. That's what I'm saying. I think ideally you would have put Kawhi on Steph, but I think that matchups wise, it makes the most. And also,
it'll be a team effort.
One piece of upside for putting Kawhi on Steph is that you can try and force Steph to guard Kawhi on the other end of the floor more. But I still think that Kawhi probably has Squon Draymond because Draymond's kind of the center of that offense in terms of moving the ball.
Yeah.
And I think that Toronto has enough guards to at least harass Curry and Klay Thompson for a while.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that OG Anunoby is not healthy for this because he is a really versatile defender and someone that could have been really important in the series against someone like Klay.
What do you do with DeMarcus Cousins if you're the Warriors?
I think he pretty much just comes in at the end of the quarters when you have to take Draymond and Steph out and you try to see if you can run stuff with him and Livingston and Klay. Because DeMarcus Cousins is still a good passer. That hasn't changed about him. It's the fact that he's lost a lot of his explosiveness. And when he even played this year, he still wasn't at 100% because he was coming back from a torn Achilles. Now he's got a quad issue along with that. That's a big issue. That's a big problem for a guy that really hasn't had much time to play. So I think you have to play him in small spurts against second units, because if you try to put him in against, I mean, he might be able to bang with Marc Gasol a little bit, but if you try to have him switch onto Kyle Lowry or even Pascal Siakam or those guys, he is not right now in good enough shape and at his peak enough to handle those things. If this was peak DeMarcus Cousins, that'd be a completely different story. He'd be able to be versatile and guard different parts of the floor and be able to pass and be able to do all these different shooting things because he was such a diverse offensive player. But I think at this point, if you're bringing him in the finals, you can't do like what the Magic did all those years ago against the Lakers and put someone in, insert them in and play them heavy minutes like the Magic did with Jameer Nelson, because they inserted heavy minutes into a guy that they wanted to be a big part of their team and it ended up ruining the chemistry of the team. And that's what I would worry about if I was the Warriors, is how much can you play him without him kind of messing up the chemistry? Because he's not really a downhill type of player. He's more of a half court kind of guy. So it's really just depends on how much you think he can handle and also what do you think he's going to bring to the floor? Because I don't think he's going to bring much scoring. I think it's going to be a lot of passing and maybe some defense.
I think you're right about DeMarcus Cousins potentially interrupting their rhythm. That said, I think the player he should replace in the rotation is Andrew Bogut.
Oh, yeah.
Who is literally like a corpse at this point.
Yeah. No,
so I think that –
absolutely.
I think it's hard to say that it's going to hurt them. I do think it might be an adjustment period for them, but I don't think it's going to hurt them.
Too many minutes.
I think your options are two things. Number one, start him and let him – pretty much play like Bogut, where he's just setting screens and getting rebounds and rumbling around on defense. Or you start Kevon Looney, which I think is the logical thing to do, bring Cousins off the bench and just, you know, basically say, go eat against whatever backups are out there.
And I mean,
I think that might force Toronto to match him with Marc Gasol, because I think that Toronto only has Marc Gasol that would really have a chance against DeMarcus Cousins in the half court.
Ibaka, I think, might have a chance.
Maybe, but Cousins is a lot bigger than Ibaka.
Yeah, but I can't understate how much rust he's going to be coming back.
Well, and that's the thing is, too, is the Warriors have this style of play they're doing, and it's almost like if you're the opponent, maybe you want them to just feed Cousins in the post and slow it down.
Well, he's kind of a curveball for them. Because
he can also shoot threes, though.
He can, but he's not really – like, if the Warriors want to play at their pace, which for them is getting a rebound off of it, having Draymond move up the floor, having those two shooters crash to their – or go to their specific shooting spots on the floor and be able to spot up for three while Draymond goes in and is able to kick. I don't know if you can do the same thing with Boogie, because Boogie's not that type of guy who's really a fast break running type of guy. He's more of someone that is effective in the half court. And while that's going to happen more in this series, I don't think he's going to be someone that could be super effective where if you're going to have him start. Because at the beginning of the games, the Warriors like to run.
Yeah, I agree. I think Looney's a far better fit.
Looney's also a much better defender than him at this point. People don't understand how much improved he's been this year as a defender and as a rim protector.
Yeah, I think Looney makes a lot more sense to the starter and let Cousins just beat up the the bench units and play maybe 15 minutes.
Have him and Jordan Bell come in with the bench units and have them.
Jordan Bell.
Jordan Bell is a serviceable bench big man. He's nothing more. But having Boogie on that floor, or maybe he just has Clay with them, maybe that empowers him a little bit more to score if they decide that's how they want to go. If they want to play more of a half-court game and he's on the floor, but then that's – it depends on how much the other guys are able to do it. I mean, Livingston's more of a half-court player. So is Iguodala. So is Jordan Bell.
Iguodala's both.
Yeah, he's played both, but Iguodala can – at this point in his career, probably serves better as a half-court player just because he doesn't have the mobility like he used to.
I think the question will be how many minutes do they play DeMarcus Cousins alongside Draymond Green and or Steph Curry?
I don't think it's much. I
don't think it's much either.
I think the most amount of minutes in especially total, Draymond. I think he would play him is 18 to 20 max.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's pushing it maybe. 15 minutes might be.
That said, DeMarcus Cousins as a 20-minute, 18-minute-a-game guy off the bench is pretty freaking scary.
Yeah, and if he shows up and he's been working on a shot and he's able to hit shots consistently, whether it's from the mid-range or from the corner threes, that's – you're not beating the Warriors.
If Kevin Durant comes back, is the series over?
Depends on when.
If Kevin Current Durant comes back, if it's a close series already and he comes back.
If they split the first two games, which – if I had to guess, I'm going to assume that's what's going to happen.
I
think the Warriors will win a game there because home court advantage doesn't matter to the Warriors. They win on the road. They're good on the road. So if it's 1-1, yeah, I think if Durant comes back and he's like 75% of Durant, they're not winning the series. Because
I think if he comes back, unless they're down big,
if they're down 2-0, then maybe I think that's a big obstacle because then you have to beat the Raptors.
And you can just stick Kawhi on Kevin Durant, and you might argue that Durant would, you know, hurt Steph Curry's rhythm.
And then it also depends on how – much rhythm Durant has, because then he'll have to guard Kawhi. And he was a really good defender this year. Yep. He was their best defender.
And the Raptors' best offense, a lot of it has been Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, it's been kind of a mixture of ISO Kawhi and then Nick Nurse's style of play, which is more of the reason he got the job and the reason why Dwayne Casey in there is ball movement.
It seems like they build leads with ball movement and sustain leads with Kawhi Leonard.
I think they play a lot of the game the way Nick Nurse wants them to play. And then in crunch time, it's give Kawhi the ball and get the F out of the way.
And that's what they never had before Kawhi.
Yeah, because, I mean, so loved DeMar DeRozan, but he was never that guy.
No.
Never was going to be.
So, I think it's going to be a fascinating series.
I think it's going to go deep regardless.
I really honestly would prefer to see the Warriors without Kevin Durant because I think it's, A, a more fair matchup, and B, a true test of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green.
Because they've only done it once this way.
Yeah, and you can argue they wouldn't have won that one if the Cavs wouldn't have had literally every injury in the world. LeBron was just dragging a bunch of
Dele and JR. And
Dele and J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. It's insane. To this day, that still remains insane.
Yeah.
So, I think the Warriors are going to win.
I think it's going to be 6 or 7.
I give Toronto, if KD does not play, I give Toronto something like a 30% chance to win. If KD plays most of the series, I think it's more like a 10 to 15% chance to win.
I think if he plays 4 games, and this is kind of a borrowed take, but I think it was a good point from the Ringer NBA show. If he plays a majority of the games, as opposed like 4 or 5 of them, like if he comes back game 2, which is probably not going to happen, but let's just say he does, it's just not going to happen. When you have 3 of the best scorers in the NBA, because people forget how good of a scorer Klay is, and he can easily score 20 points in a quarter. He's put up 30 in a quarter before.
Like 37.
Yeah. Klay, people forget about how good Klay is because he was marginalized.
Who else put up like 35 in a quarter before? Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And we still love you, Kevin Love.
We do.
But if
I was Pascal, I think the biggest X factor is going to be how does Pascal Siakam handle this moment not in terms of defense, because he was able to provide that in the Milwaukee series, but
he was a ghost in the last series.
He was a good scorer for them for most of this year, including the playoffs, until he got to Milwaukee and he got neutralized. So he's really going to have to figure out if he can put up a 15, 16, 17 points in a game, because they're going to need him sometimes, or it's going to be Fred VanVleet, or it's going to be Serge Ibaka. They're going to need a third guy to step up, and Lowry's going to have to continue to step up as well.
I want to say this about the Bucks. Fantastic regular season team.
Yeah.
And I think they were a bit overrated in the postseason for this reason. I think, first of all, everyone was like, well, let the Bucks just finish it off quick so we can get the best finals matchup. I think Toronto might be a better finals matchup, first of all. And second of all, Giannis still has not developed as a shooter enough.
Right.
And look,
Bledsoe was also horrible.
I don't trust Eric Bledsoe at all in the first place.
He was straight up unplayable.
Brogdon's a nice piece. Middleton's a nice piece.
Yeah.
But that said, the Bucks are still missing a number two true ball handler.
Yeah, they need a second
And
guy.
I think I could have told you that, but no one was going to listen to me because it was the Bucks. And the Bucks had an amazing season. But right. I think, you know, not to draw a parallel to LeBron with Giannis, but they're similar style players. I think that kind of like the 08-09 Cavs that lost the Magic, I think that's a good comparison with these Bucks because these Bucks are better. Chris Middleton's better than anything LeBron ever had in Cleveland. Okay. And, you know, Brogdon is better than Mo Williams, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that those teams were built around one superstar and had one way to play. And when they ran to a team that, you know, could kind of neutralize that matchup, they didn't have a backup option.
Yeah, and that's something that you might have to start thinking about Budenholzer in general because it happened with the Hawks teams as well when they were a great regular season team.
Yeah.
That team didn't have a true star like Giannis. So that's the one caveat that
He's only been there for 1 year. But still, it's I don't understand what you're saying.
But his system seems to work a lot better in the regular season and then even in the early rounds of the playoffs. But when you face teams like a Toronto or a Philly or Indiana when they are healthy next year with a healthy Oladipo, who knows what else they could do because they're a tough defensive team. You're not going to get away with that stuff. You're just not.
Well, you can if Giannis is able to hit down
But Giannis can't shoot, and that's the problem. Yeah. Is that
when he can't shoot off the dribble greatly yet?
Like he can shoot kind of in the mid range, but if you get him anywhere outside of the elbow, you're begging him to shoot the ball. Yeah. And as good of a passer as he is, people know that that's what he wants to do. It doesn't matter how good of a passer you are if they know that's what you're going
to
do.
I think Milwaukee needs a number two playmaker, or they need Giannis to develop a little bit better as a shooter.
Well, they need.
They're not getting another playmaker, so it's going to have to fall on Giannis.
They need a better point guard.
The thing is, Giannis is going to be a free agent in a few years here. It's like, at what point does he say, I can't? Yeah, anyways.
They need a better point guard straight up. Like, I think Middleton is great as a 2A, 2B option.
They gave Bledsoe a lot of money, man.
I know, and that's the biggest problem is that they paid him hoping that he was going to be that third guy for them. And I think they overestimated just how good he was and how good Middleton could be as maybe a second guy.
Because
Middleton is good, but he's not a Paul George. He's not a Carmelo-type scorer. He's not that type
of
guy.
He's an ideal number three.
He's like a 2B, 2B3.
Well, and look, they have very little flexibility going forward.
Yeah, they paid a lot of guys, and they might not.
That said, if Kawhi leaves Toronto, they're still your clear Eastern Conference favorite.
Yeah, it's between them and depending on what the offseason happens for Philly. Philly could also be up there, too.
And potentially Boston, but.
Yeah, I guess I forgot about Boston.
Yeah, Boston sucks. Go Cavs. Anyways, all right. We'll be back soon to talk about whatever is on our minds, be it Odell Beckham not showing up to voluntary minicamp. Who cares?
Colin Cowherd cares.
He's got an orange Rolls Royce with a Browns jersey popping up out of the front. That's all I care
saw
about.
That was hilarious.
It's just because people can't wait until football season starts.
Yeah, check out us for any football content. We're gonna be
anything,
doing
anything
red,
coming up.
Red and Blue will be coming up shortly because the Champions League final is on Sunday. So the Europa League final just happened. No one really cares. Chelsea won.
Remember NFL Europa?
We got a quarterback out of them. I forget who it was.
I don't know.
But
anyway. All right, we'll be back soon, guys. We'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.
Peace.